Oh, hello.
Hello again.
And welcome to Hard to Say Goodbye, the only podcast out there that's going to help you through one of the toughest times in your life when your favorite TV show ends. And specifically, we're working our way through Game of Thrones right now in season one. We're going to talk about episode 8. But quickly, let's introduce everybody. Trisha, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm really happy to talk about episode 8. We're one away from the episode 9 biggie, and things are lining up.
Oof. There's a lot of feelings. I have a lot of thoughts. DJ, how you doing?
I'm doing well as well. I really like this episode on the rewatch.
Mm-hmm. It was very good. A bunch of my favorite scenes, but here's a quick synopsis.
Give it to us.
Courtesy of IMDb. Let's hear me stumble through it. Joffrey has claimed the throne, and he and his mother eliminate Ned Stark's supporters. Ned is imprisoned, and Sansa remains engaged to Joffrey, but Arya seems to have escaped. Cersei gets Sansa to write to her eldest brother, Robb, to ask him to swear loyalty to the new king. Robb agrees to go, but at the head of an army. Catelyn receives word of her husband's imprisonment and learns that her sister will not support her. Tyrion and Bronn encounter the Stone Crows and make them an offer they can't refuse. At the wall, Jon's wolf ghost alerts him to trouble, and it seems that the White Walkers have returned. Daenerys has trouble accepting the rape of the new female slaves, and when Drogo supports her, he is called out by one of his men.
Yes,
that's a thing. That's a pretty good sum up of it.
Yeah, which is my favorite Drogo scene. If you guys don't mind, I'd like to dive into a scene that interested me more on the rewatch than it probably did when I initially watched it.
And take it away, DJ.
It's when Varys meets Ned in the dungeon. That might actually be our first scene.
It is.
Saying, well, there you go. So chronologically,
one of the first. Yes.
It's almost the first.
It was very interesting. One, because he basically says, "Your mercy killed Robert." The way
does he mean by that?
The implication sounds like, because again, something I'm appreciating this rewatch that I don't think I appreciated before is like, this is the one where so Rob gets the letter from Sansa, then assembles his army, then is halfway. You know what I mean? So it's like months pass over this episode, and so considering how much time passes each episode, the implication seems to be to me is that Cersei found out that Ned knew about that situation. Somehow she got word to Lancel, and that's how Robert ended up dead. The wording Varys uses seems to heavily imply that the plan was not to kill Robert until Cersei found out.
You know what? I did not interpret it that way, but he does also in that same conversation say, "Why did you tell Cersei?"
Yes.
So he very well could have meant your mercy, meaning you telling Cersei is what killed Robert.
Yeah. Either way, Varys really drives the point home that Big Boo Boo letting them know you shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is where he says, you know, when he says, "Varys, whose house do you serve?" And he says, "None of them. I serve the realm." Mm-hmm. That's where this happens in this conversation, which I took that to mean like the good of the people.
Yeah. And I think that that reading is reinforced later on in the show.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be Varys's, because Varys perceives himself as kind of like one of the people. He doesn't come from any sort of, actually neither does Baelish, but how they interpret where they come from is very different.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because Varys himself was dismembered as a child.
Yes.
I think he's incredibly sensitive to children having to suffer.
Yeah.
Which an inconsistency in that then is, why does he seem to be supportive of them poisoning Daenerys?
Yes.
When and especially he's on the council.
Especially since he seems to be backing Dany's play for the throne.
Right. So I know later on, I think it's season 5 in the series, they try to make some moment where he brushes off a like, "Well, I had to do what I had to do at the time," or something like that. But for the most part, I feel like that's Varys's motivation.
Yeah.
Well, also throughout this episode, we're seeing all of the Starks reacting in their own way to Ned being in prison. Like, you see Rob leading off with the army.
Yes.
You see Catelyn's reaction. You see Arya run away and accidentally kills that kid, right?
Like, oh, yeah, straight up,
right?
Like Arya's first kill.
No. Yeah, and it was totally an accident. Like, I mean, she was protecting herself, but she wasn't meaning to do that. It seemed accidental from
bonus
my point of view.
Episode.
You know when you're a kid, you're like, "Oh, I'm just going to rest here with my scissors just to see. Oh, I accidentally cut my hair."
Did you do that as a kid?
I did do that as a kid.
You did that as a kid. I did that to my brother as a kid.
Oh, there you go.
I cut his right there on the bangs.
Her motivation in that moment is a little bit clearer in the books, and we'll talk about that in the bonus episode.
Interesting. And also, I'm going to say the goodbye to cereal. And what a good goodbye it is.
Is it, though?
I think so.
In a book full of ambiguous deaths.
But here's the thing. The last guy he's left fighting definitely shows up later.
Okay.
But maybe so how did he get out the window.
How did he, okay.
Parachute it.
I mean,
parachute
it, looks, it out of there. It looks real bad for Serial Pharrell. That's not.
Also, why doesn't he pick up one of the other swords? After he disarms everybody else.
Also, I know, a good thought.
I know, like, he makes a big deal, like, you know, a real sword doesn't need two hands, right, but, like, right. they're right there, dog. Like, come
maybe
on.
Maybe he wanted to keep up appearances for Arya and he had a gun in his back pocket. You know, there could have there's another option. You're just not thinking.
I would have loved that. The like, how it should have ended Game of Thrones. And he pulls out, like, two guns, like, fires him in the armor, jumps out the window backwards.
That's why there's a different actor for the mountain. Another guy comes in, he's like, don't worry, I got pick up. He was another tall guy. He's like, I can
actually
move up the ranks quick.
This the guy that he ends up fighting, which is stuff, this is all the little things that you don't pick up when you're first watching it. He's the guy that Arya offs in, I'm gonna call it a brothel over on Braavos way later in the show.
Oh.
The one of the most gruesome murders on the show, full of gruesome murders.
Yeah.
That seems
pretty
rough.
Impressive. Yeah. I am just thinking now of, and you guys, I don't know if you can answer this question. If you cannot, I'm going to Google it before the end of the episode. But so then there's the scene where all this is going down in King's Landing, and then let's shoot up to the wall. Commander Mormont is like, hey, John, pour yourself some ale, sit down. I got something to tell you. And then when John's like, what about my sisters? Commander Mormont has a weird line where he's like, I'm sure the girls will be treated gently.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Mormont's seen some things in his time. He can't think that's true. I mean, his son is exiled.
Yeah.
And does anyone remember why Mormont is on the wall?
I was actually going to ask that.
What I'm Googling.
I did look it up. And I didn't find a reason.
What?
Yeah, I assumed that maybe he ended up on the wall because of Jorah's. But the stuff I saw, he went to the wall. And the house, his household passed on to Jorah, and then Jorah was exiled. So that didn't answer my question of why did he end up on the wall?
So I just put in why Mormont, and it autofilled take the black.
Yeah.
Why Mormont,
take
the black.
Let me know if you find an answer, because I couldn't find one, and it's very interesting. I assume, because it's very much driven home that these people don't do it by choice, but it seems like he just chose to.
In the North, some people do. Benjen did.
I have an answer. It says, So what did Jorah Mormont do to be sent to the wall? Not a damn thing is the response. He was getting on in years and wanted to pass lordship of Bear Island to Jorah, so he voluntarily went to the wall as a sort of retirement plan. Jorah took over his father's seat. Took over his father's seat.
That's crazy. Yeah. That makes him seem so
much... Yeah, that's kind of what this that I just found said, too.
That makes him seem so much fucking cooler. Just like, oh, you know, I could just relax, but I'm going to go lead these scoundrels.
No, and it's interesting because everything we see... For the most part, everything we see of Commander Mormont and everything we see from Jorah, for the most part, they're both pretty upstanding dudes.
Because they're from the North, and the North is dope.
That's true, but it makes me wonder, like, Jorah, I mean, was his, like, slaving as bad as they make it out to be? Like, did he really do all that?
Maybe the slaves wanted to be there.
Or, like, maybe that's not really what he was doing. It was just misconstrued for some reason. I don't know. Yeah. It makes me question things because I'm like, Jorah seems like a pretty honorable guy.
And maybe that happened. He's been away for a while, so maybe he's kind of sobered up.
Maybe.
And figured out his life a little
bit more. But Commander Mormont, who we assume raised him, is a pretty upstanding guy.
He's a good
dude. Mormont family seems pretty cool.
But speaking of the North, when Rob gathers his banners, you see how rowdy the North, it's a different type of tough than King's Landing.
Mm.
There's
oh,
not,
for sure.
There's not scheming, but they're definitely, they're people that really respect it when your wolf bites off their hand. You know what I mean? Like
that's a weird scene.
That's who these people are. So if you put the Lannisters in that environment, they'd get eaten alive. Whereas on King's Land, it drives home the idea of home turf advantage. Mm. Like,
it's a terrifying world. So you bring up the scene about the dire wolf biting off the fingers.
Yeah.
That scene is so weird to me. I feel like maybe the timing is a little bit off in the edit or something, but when he delivers that line, like, your meat is really tough or whatever it is. Your meat is bloody tough is the line. It just seems so awkward. It's like everyone kind of starts laughing and they're like, I know when you read it, it makes sense because you imagine it however you want to imagine it.
Yeah.
And like you could make it make sense. But I wonder if it's like the comedy of the edit is a second off, or if the line could have been delivered differently or something, but it didn't work for me. How about you?
No, it worked for me. It's just it underlines how the staging in a lot of this episode, sometimes like when Arya kills the guy, it's just weird. It's just weirdly put together.
It's weird. There are weird pacing.
Yeah, which I don't remember it standing out to me when I first watched it, because you're so into what's happening. But now I've watched it a few times. So it's like, wah. But
and it's a dramatic episode. Everything's amping up really fast. But speaking of scenes that I did enjoy, the scene with Sansa, where it's like, if watching it through the first time, and if you didn't know where anyone's going to end up, you can get frustrated with her because she just wants to be a princess and she wants to be safe and everything like that. Right. And she wants to make sure her dad's okay. I do enjoy the scene where like, so you could see Cersei manipulating her, and you could see how like Varys and them talking. It's tough because she's a kid; she doesn't know what she's saying. She's just trying to help her dad.
You think when you're a kid and you're surrounded by like three or four important adults, and they're telling you to do this thing, and you're like deep down, you're like, this doesn't seem right. Well, but what are you supposed to do?
At this point, she really trusts Cersei. Mm-hmm. She really thinks Cersei is her friend and is looking out for her here.
Yeah.
And so if she thinks that, especially with her dad being a traitor now, like that Cersei is her only friend, and Cersei is telling her, you know, you're a sweet girl, you care about your father, this is what's going to save your family in Winterfell, this is what's going to save your father, this is what you need to do. It totally makes sense why she would do it.
And I know when I was first watching, I pretty much hated everything Sansa did. But in hindsight, it's like she actually makes a pretty smart play at the end where she's kind of like, you know, mercy for my dad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's actually a pretty good.
And to do it in front of everyone.
And it almost works.
Almost.
Almost works.
So when I watch this through after years of people kind of being really hard on her and like watching it, I'm like, she's kind of being annoying, but she's being a kid. So it's like, I can't be too upset. Also in this episode, she's at least like she's being more like Ned. She's like trying to make a decision to like, that makes everybody okay, and it's
works
out.
She's trying to do the right thing based on the information she has at the time. Yeah. I know when this show first came out, we were doing TV show back in the day.
Shout out.
Yeah, and Mr. Steve Zaragoza was very firmly in the I hate everything Sansa does camp. Mm-hmm. And it frustrated me to no end because I felt like I was always just defending Sansa's choices.
Yeah.
So it's nice to hear that on a rewatch, people are like, all right, I see where Sansa's coming from. Yeah, right now.
Well, if you want an enemy that's not the enemy to be mad at or to be annoyed about, like, I get it. But, like, no, she's making decisions that all of us would have made if we were that if we could hold ourselves together in such a trying time.
I know in the first season, she just was one of a few brats for me in this. And then I think she has if not the best arc of anybody on the show.
I agree with that.
Because I know first season, I was like, oh, fuck Sansa. By the end of season two, I was on board with her, and now she's one of the best characters on the show. You know what I mean?
She has to go through with most of the politics than anybody else. Yeah. Has to deal with some of the worst people, even though like she does go through some physical trials that are terrible, but like for the most part, she just has to like, she just sees how everything works now.
Yeah. So. One little moment that I really liked in this episode, I didn't realize that Tyrion met the Stone Crows and then ran into Tywin in the same episode. But one little, like just little character beat, the Stone Crows show up and Tyrion does his bit where he's like talking his way out of it, which is really good.
That's all he can do.
But then the Stone Crows are like, nah, fuck it, we're going to kill you. And like, Bronn already has a sword out, and when they say that, it's like, cool. And he pulls out his dagger, and it's like, let's go. Like, let's sleep. Because I don't think he thinks he's going to win, because there's like,
no, but what other option does he have?
But it's just a nice little, like, just wait for him. By the way, it's a fucking cool dagger, too. Like, it's dope. Bronn's cool.
But it's really interesting to see how Jaime solves problems, how Cersei solves problems versus how Tyrion solves problems. Like, they are three very different ways to attack an objective.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating then to watch each of them interplay with Tywin and how that works out. Because I feel like anytime, like when we see Tywin with Tyrion here in this scene, he does not respect any of his kids. Mm. He thinks they're all real dumb, which is crazy because Jaime, Cersei, and Tyrion are arguably the smartest players in the game.
Mm.
And Tywin just constantly treats them all like they're imbeciles.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy to me.
Maybe he's aware, or maybe he's insecure.
Or maybe that's how he motivates them further.
Yeah. Yikes. That will play out in a good way for him, probably.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Speaking of, let's talk about on the other side of the planet. We have a world. I don't know what this is. No. Floating piece of rock out in space.
it's inside the blue-eyed giant.
Of course. With Daenerys, and you get a very fun kill for that DJ enjoyed from yes. Drogo, but also you get Danny confronting one of like the main cultural, like one of these things that just the Dothraki do and they don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
And her trying to impose what she knows growing up. And it's the right thing to do. It's like to stop them from raping and pillaging all these people and like murdering them. And it doesn't work out well for...
Yeah, we don't really know that at this point. Well, it is interesting because what you're referring to is the idea that, like, so she's like, hey, we're going to go to Westeros. And mm-hmm. she doesn't think about the politics of what that means. Mm-hmm. And now she's confronted with the idea that for the Dothraki, that means raping and killing a bunch of people mm-hmm. to get the stuff they need to get over there. And then she makes another call in this episode, which is a very Ned. It's a Ned. She makes what seems like a really good call that ends up being really bad. It ends up being the absolute wrong decision. And if you just kind of stayed out of it, maybe everything would have worked out fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and this is what kind of like, and again, because I watched the show first, of course, that's the lens I see it through. This is what kind of justifies the decision in episode one, because I don't think you go from loving hubby Drogo in episode one to I'm cool with all of my tribesmen raping and murdering people by this episode. Like, this is who,
oh, you feel like that's inconsistent? I don't know. I thought that they did a really great job of explaining that, like, they see these people as less than them. These are sheep people.
Yeah.
Of course, if they were Dothraki,
yeah,
we wouldn't do that.
Maybe. That's a really good point. But I like that Dany was... This is one of the times where she's confronted with the realities of her goals, but also it leads to one of the fucking coolest fights in the show, where Drogo straight up a Mortal Kombat fatality, rips open his throat, grabs the tongue out, and then throws it on his bone pile.
It's pretty intense.
It's so cool. I understand. We'll talk about this later. I'm understanding that because this is, he gets the wound in there, which really is a small wound. Maybe she should have just let it heal.
Yeah,
but
in the series,
it plays out differently. Yeah, but I understand. I'm assuming from what I understand, it plays out differently because of budget reasons. Later seasons, they would have been able to do what happened. This one, it's like, hey, it's just a one-on-one fight.
Oh, it might be. It might be. Another interesting thing that I heard is that this scene was only added into the series, that big fight, because mm-hmm. Jason Momoa felt like we hadn't seen Khal Drogo fight, really.
I agree.
And he was like, before he goes out, I think Khal needs to have this moment, so they added that in.
I agree.
Is that a bad... I think that's a good decision overall.
No,
right?
I think it was very cool, but it's interesting to me that, like, I don't know, I always like to hear stories where, like, the actor has that much of an input or, you know, on the character's arc. That's cool.
My favorites are the ones that should have died and then they don't. And then becoming like
Jesse
in Breaking Bad and then Walton Goggins' character in Justified. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I like that because I always see Drogo as this big badass figure. And then you mm-hmm. realize, like, wait, this is literally the only time we ever see him throw down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He did good.
He did all right. I mean, cool. Viserys, he did do that, but he wasn't fighting. He was just
that wasn't much of a fight.
Right.
You were just intimidated, and then he followed through with what he promised. Yeah. So right. it was pretty intense.
Right.
But we also see what's happening with Catelyn. We mentioned it for a second, but we see that Lyza.
Mm-hmm.
Lyza.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's not on board with...
anything, really.
Anything, no. She just wants to feed her kid.
Only has eyes for her baby, and mm-hmm. everybody else be damned.
Yeah.
And I hate... / love, but mostly hate, how she gets that raven in the morning and doesn't even bother to tell Catelyn. Like, just doesn't even care.
Oh, things that didn't mean anything to me first time watching it. When you see the castle and all the ravens are leaving, I can guarantee you I didn't know what that meant then. And now I'm like, oh, it's the messages going out. Now I know.
Yep.
I didn't catch that.
So yeah.
When you watch it two more times, I'll finally
catch
it.
I'm telling you, man, the fifth time it all becomes clear. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a crazy one. And then, you know, we get a really interesting moment with Catelyn later in the episode where she's reunited with Rob, because Lyza told her in that scene, you know, do you even know what your son's doing? He's being an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how Catelyn's going to react when she sees him. And there's that beautiful moment where they just kind of stand there and look at each other.
Yeah.
And you know that all they want to do is hug and reunite. But, like, does that make Rob look weak? And they can't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a really well done moment.
Yeah.
It's really, really
agreed.
Good.
Agreed. No, mm-hmm. And overall, I was surprised of how the ending of this episode was pretty somber with Sansa begging and being very candid with Joffrey and just being like, if you love me at all, like, just do this one thing. He will apologize. It'll be okay. And I just, I like that this episode ends this way. I like that trying to think about this as a person who had never, who doesn't know how this is going to go, you think that even though Joffrey's a little brat and you've seen him be a brat to a degree, it was cool to see, like, maybe Ned was wrong. Maybe Joffrey can, like, actually be a good king.
Yeah, it's interesting.
If you just try to think of it from what we know so far.
Yeah, after 6 years of knowing how awful Joffrey is, it's interesting going back, rewatching it. Like, I think in my mind at this point, when I was first watching it, Sansa and Joffrey were essentially flip sides of the same coin. They're just little brats. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize you don't know yet how fucking awful Joffrey, just really how bad it gets with him until the next episode, and then you realize exactly what you're dealing with.
Doesn't Tyrion learn about Joffrey in this episode too, that he's the king now? I think
yeah,
and I'm like, probably didn't want to smack him earlier.
And
huh?
I don't know, that whole scene where Sansa comes in and begs for mercy for her father, and Joffrey says, "Well, if he confesses." That, to me, I was just watching Cersei's reaction like a hawk.
Yeah, because she's
to
like
all of it.
She's mad dogging Joffrey. Like,
do you think? But even when Joffrey's like, "Let my betrothed speak," that seemed very out of character to me for him to let her speak in front of all of those people. Because it's one thing for him to lie to her when they're in private and be nice to her when they're in private, but to give her a forum like that is incredibly dangerous. And I don't know that Joffrey would have done it. I don't know that Cersei would have been okay with it, which made me think, did they put Sansa up to this or put the idea in her head somehow and kind of stage it from this far back?
My reading of the scene is that she does it spontaneously, and Joffrey's on enough of a power trip that I don't think Cersei wants that, because that's why, like, Cersei's like, you better say the right thing, damn it. But Joffrey basically thinks he's untouchable. So he's like, yeah, sure, let her talk.
Why not?
Yeah, because it's like, I'm a king. Like, he's just like Sansa views herself as a princess. I think Joffrey is playing of what he imagines a king is. You know what I mean?
Maybe. And I don't know.
Living that power fantasy out. And so he's just like, yes, I'll do this. No, because as we see later, Joffrey behaves spontaneously and doesn't really think through a lot about what he does or doesn't do and why he does or doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just made me think that maybe they were behind it a little bit more than we're led to believe.
Well, you do get in later episodes that the schemers behind the scenes, pretty much everybody but Joffrey, had a different plan for how this was going to go down. Mm. The way it goes down was not...
Mm-hmm.
Beyond this point was not how anybody anticipated. They all had a plan. And Joffrey really fucks it up for everybody.
Well, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because that's in the future episodes, and I'm excited to talk about that. Yeah. But I think that's any final thoughts, Trisha, because you have very detailed notes, which I'll do next time.
You know I do that. Let's see. So
I think we got everything.
Some things that we missed. Let me go through some things that we missed. We completely missed Ghost and John saving Commander Mormont from our first ever white experience.
Which is another good Sam moment, because the second they bring the body out, he's like, yeah, burn that.
Yeah.
yeah, burn that. And everybody's like...
And I love that Sam's like, I read it in a book once. And you're like, Sam has read so many books. It like, does he just have a photographic memory or something?
And then later when he's like, yeah, that's totally a white walker's made it. And that's why I had blue eyes and it came back from the dead. And it's like, okay, we...
And you have to burn it with fire.
Yeah, keep this guy around.
Yeah.
He's just like knowledge bomb that's going to be real useful, guys.
But it does make sense why he'd remember that, because it would be like the one cool thing in all the ledgers of like what child had what color hair. Exactly. Wait, there's people that come back from the dead. Remember that info. Yeah. It's all the zombie info that we
well,
never
the children
need.
Of the forest. Like, there's a lot of magical
that's,
stuff.
That's
if he's
basically
that.
The Game of Thrones books of this universe.
Yeah. no, I.
It's true.
It makes sense. And that was, I do really like that scene because you see Ghost on the other side. Like, I kind of wanted to see Ghost like really tear into the White Walker. That'd have been really cool.
Yeah, I miss. We've had a few seasons without the direwolves and I miss them, and I get it, apparently, like, just money wise it's a chore, but I miss them.
Yeah, because like, they have to size them up and everything. Yeah. And like, I don't even know how you pull it off,
and you want them to mean more. You want them to have some kind of bond with the Stark children, and when they kind of just kill them off willy nilly or they get lost, then it loses that magic. Mm-hmm. We also have a really fun line from Asha in this episode, because I know you guys were talking about Naked Hodor, but the Asha line where she says to Bran that I never caught this on the first watch, that the old gods have no power in the South. And she all their says that they can't, the old gods, they can't watch there. The weirwood, they can't watch there, and the old gods have no power in the south. And I thought, now knowing what we know about the old gods and Bran and the weirwoods and all that, does that mean that Bran can't watch things in the south?
Good question.
Because so far the series has given us extra hints towards the overall goal, more so than what the books ever gave.
Yeah.
So is this maybe the showrunners and the writers giving us an extra little nugget?
But can he war? He can still warg into an animal that could go down south, right?
Don't know.
Yeah,
we haven't seen him do that though, so we don't know.
Yeah,
as far as we know.
I mean, technically he could, I guess, but I thought that was just a really interesting line, and I was like, ooh, I wonder if that means more than we initially thought that it did. That was interesting.
Love the name Weirwood. Sam, do we have a question for this episode?
Yes, but we covered it already pretty much thoroughly throughout. It was about the Dothraki.
It's Big Appa's question, and he's really excited that we read it.
Okay. Sorry, let me, I'll read it.
Yeah.
We've answered it, but I will read it. Thank you, Big Appa, for writing in. Your name on Patreon is Court Ogle, and you write, ahoy hoy, guys. In episode 8, The Pointy End, we see how savage the Dothraki are as they rape, kill, and enslave the Lamb Men. My question is, do you think that the Khalazar will be able to follow the laws of Westeros, essentially changing their entire culture after the final battle is done, or will they go back to Essos?
No, I don't think they're changing their ways.
No,
it doesn't look like they're good at that.
That's a no.
Yeah.
But thank you for writing in. We appreciate it.
That's a pretty hard no. I don't think they're changing their ways. I mean, as long as Dany's ruling, they will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she's in charge.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, that's a pretty ingrained part of their culture. Even when Khal has his like huge speech, he's like, we will rape them. Women, like that's part of it.
Yeah.
You're like,
And she's still learning the language, so she maybe missed that.
Yeah, she maybe missed that.
She zoned out. It was a long speech. She zoned out for a minute.
Yeah. She was still trying to process all that heart she ate. So I know it's been like a month or so, but
it takes a while to digest.
It's traumatizing.
Yeah. Another thing we didn't talk about from this episode is when Rob chooses to release the scout, the Lannister scout that they catch.
Foreshadowing for next episode.
And he says, you know, tell Lord Tywin that I'm coming for him with 20,000 men.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, you stupid fool. And that's, I think, when we realize that maybe Rob's not as dumb and young as everyone thinks he is.
Yeah, and I think the way that plays when first watching this episode, it seems like a real noble decision. And then you find out it's a little crafty. Rob's being a little crafty.
Good. Mm-hmm. Thank God.
Yeah.
And then at the end of this episode, everything gets turned on its head because before Sansa begs for mercy, Cersei makes some new appointments.
She does.
She says there's a new Hand of the King and it's going to be Tywin.
Yep.
And Lord Janos Slynt is given a whole part of the realm for betraying Ned in the scene in the last episode. So that's how he was bought off for Cersei's. Mm-hmm. And that Ser Barristan Selmy gets fired from the Kingsguard, which they're supposed to serve till death, and replaced with Jaime.
The Kingsguard situation is like the Night's Watch, right? You don't take any...
No wives.
Okay.
Yeah, no wives.
Cooler
serve until death.
Yeah.
Cooler outfits.
Yeah.
Maybe some more political intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of standing.
Yeah, Barrison's off on his own. He's doing
he doesn't
soul
take
searching.
It well, by the way. He definitely didn't.
That's such a sad moment.
He's, he's been doing it for what, maybe 40 years?
Turns out okay for him. He does some good shit.
Spoilers. But I feel like you see the people in the court like...
Yeah.
Like, you can tell if they can do this to Ser Barristan, then none of us are safe. Cersei's crazy.
I like his meltdown where, like, they pull his swords and, like, come on. Like, I trained all of you. Like, you're not going to get past me. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is cool. He's very grizzled and he's very aged, but he would 100% whoop everyone in that
room.
The
100% whoop everybody.
I think the Hound could
have taken
him.
Was he in there?
Yeah. You see the other guards and, like, and then the Hound's back there, like, with the sword. And it's like, yeah, you wouldn't get past the Hound.
Yeah.
So he chooses to go, but that's a really, really cool scene. And Cersei, making Jaime head of Kingsguard, ensures that he won't be wed to anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
Incest is incest, everybody.
For love.
So that is episode 8. We're going to talk about episode 9. I can't remember if anything big happens in episode 9.
Oh, probably not. Probably not.
So, Trisha, where can I find you?
At that girl Trish, no I in the girl.
Sam.
At Sam Basher, everywhere that matters, DJ.
At DJ Talks Trash, everywhere that matters. Thank you guys for joining us for Hard to Say Goodbye. And don't forget to check out our bonus episodes. Don't forget to check out our watch longs. Don't forget to check out episodes 9 review coming soon.
Very, very soon. We appreciate you guys and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh man, winter is coming. Can you feel it? It's getting chilly in The Room.
My nipples are standing at attention.
If you want to join us in preparation for the final season of Game of Thrones and more of these episodes, getting them up to a month early, plus bonus content, plus you can watch along with us, please go visit patreon.com/hardtosaygoodbye. That is how we're making the show happen. That is how we're keeping the lights on. And we have an amazing community over there that we would be super excited to have you join for as low as $1 a month. That's like, what, 3 cents a day?
That's there's math there that I haven't done to prepare for this outro. But we hope you guys enjoy. We want to make sure that we can do enough, all the episodes leading up to the final season. So in order to do that, check out the Patreon. We love you guys, and we hope you enjoy. Let us know what you think, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.